Hey guys, Matthew here with my dog Riker, and just introducing today's topics for the podcast, which is makerspace. I know that term probably triggers a number of emotions for you as a shop teacher, so we start by unpacking the definition of makerspace and people using your shop as a makerspace. And is it a rebranding of the industrial arts? You know, and we get into that, as well as how it can actually be helpful for deleting the stigma that a lot of us fight as quote unquote shop teachers. So I hope you enjoy, and I hope you have some input to the conversation. And if so, shoot it our way at Shop Class Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, shopclasspodcast@gmail.com. Hit Ron up directly at Mr. G's Workshop on Instagram, or myself at Jack of All Learning, periods between the words, on Instagram. Enjoy.
Mr. Barberchek!
What's up, Ron?
Yo! Welcome to the shop teacher. Welcome, welcome, welcome with Mr. Barberchek and Mr. G.
Oh, it gets better every time. Better every time.
Yeah.
So.
What's the topic this time?
Probably a lot of y'all's favorite latest education buzzwords. My dog doesn't even like
it. Oh, yeah.
Make it sense.
What did your dog just say?
He was just growling. Did you hear him?
Yeah, because he knew the topic coming up.
Yeah. So makerspaces, makerspacing, makerspace, spaces for makers.
Well, not just that. So just anytime you reinvent industrial arts and call it STEM, STEAM, makerspace, whatever you want to call it, making stuff with your hands is what it always has been and never has changed.
Right. Yeah, that's an important point. I think that's a lot. Education's full of the whole buzzword thing. I relate it to the fashion industry. So your administrators and your people, your top-heavy bureaucrats have to come up with a new word to sound cool and smart, you know? And then they can just parade around and be like, oh, you don't make your space. You don't STEM. You need to STEM more. You need to project-based learn more, you know? And every fall, there's a new buzzword coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, the positive side is that it's bringing a lot of awareness. It's pretty exciting. I don't want to rag on it too much.
Right. Because right. There's a place for it. There's a place for the rebranding. And I hear you. Yeah. We're going to unpack all that. The good and the bad and the ugly.
Yeah. We're going to do the whole thing. But we're shop teachers. So we can totally rag on makerspaces and theme and STEM, because, you know, really it's kind of like we were already doing that and then people just kind of jumped on.
Yeah, it's funny, the whole like term makerspace, what I've noticed, it's kind of got like three different definitions, because you've got the private sector, and like, you know, if you open up a makerspace in the private sector, it's almost like a gym, but it's like a full-on shop. You know, you get your gym membership, you go into this full-on shop, and you can like weld and woodwork there, and you pay a monthly fee. And a lot of people are doing that. They're calling their place like Detroit Makerspace or whatever it is, you know? And then you got the public library angle, which is much more like risk-free, very playful, very laid back, you know, maybe some 3D printing, maybe some circuit boards you get to play with and stuff like the, I don't know, makey and kind of the more gadgets and gadget stuff.
Yeah.
And then you got
different forms.
Right. And then within the education sector, it really varies. Like it goes from I'm to the point now where it's like, what is a makerspace? Because it could mean they're making snowmen out of styrofoam balls, you know? or it could be what we do.
Yeah, so I feel like I can define the major difference between a makerspace and like a traditional wood shop, auto shop, metal shop, which would fall under like industrial arts.
Right. Okay.
And so that would be that. It all comes down to risk. So a makerspace, I think, would have less risk. So, you know, which is good. So learning through play, it's kind of an open format. That would be makerspace. You walk in and anyone with any skill level can use failure as a tool to learn. So they could take apart a computer and maybe they put it back, maybe they don't, but they learn. They 3D print something. If the printer crashes into itself or doesn't print correctly, no harm because it's just plastic and it's not going to cut or break anybody. You know, putting circuits together like Legos, like little bits, no harm. You know, there's not even – they don't even solder. Programming a robot to walk around. If it doesn't walk around, no harm, right? So I think that's kind of like – what I think of in an open makerspace, and it's like learning through play, which is awesome. Whereas industrial arts, what it has is it has all that playful stuff, but what it does have is three things that make it completely different. And it all has to do with risk. So what I would say is there's three things. Number one is people can get hurt, okay? Table saw, bandsaw, welders, whatever, okay? The second thing is the object you're trying to make, the material, could get wasted, and that could be expensive. And then the third thing is you could break the machine that you're working on. So that's why there's this barrier into industrial arts. It's not a free space, and it has to be managed and curated you know, by a barrier person. A shop teacher. So, and that's where a lot of misconceptions, I think, arise, and there's like a friction. So someone walks into a shop and they say, oh, is this a makerspace? You know, the shop teacher might say, sure. And then they say, okay, cool, I'm going to use this bandsaw. And you're like, okay, well, you know how to use it? And they go, no. And then they just go ahead and use it. And then the shop teacher actually has to say, whoa, 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 not so fast.
Right. Yeah,
I'm in charge of this place.
Yeah, typically it's they don't say no. They talk about they say yes and brag about how many times they've used it and then show they don't know how to use it.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah, there'll be some false information there.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's
kind of like, yeah, go ahead.
No, that makes sense. Like within the education realm, that's kind of what it is kind of that guide. And I understand the movement of learn, like kind of learn through play, where we don't always do that. We do some of that, you know, we do it in bits and pieces. I think that's the common theme, whether you're building snowballs from styrofoam or you're actually utilizing a shop space. I think the common theme of a maker space is it's a learn through play.
Right.
Is the objective, the main objective.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think there, you know, I value failure at my highest, which people that listen to this podcast know that. And so I love learning through play. I love all that. And so here's where I think I could offer some advice to someone who walks into like an industrial art shop and just says, hey, I want to make this thing. Where's the drill? So some people like walk into my shop and they'll say, I want to use your drill. Instead of saying, this is the goal I want to accomplish. What is the best way you recommend? They don't want my opinion because they're convinced it's a makerspace and not a workshop. And so if it's a makerspace, well, they don't want anybody's opinion. They just want to try it. The only problem is you got those three factors. People could get hurt, material can get wasted, and then the machine could get broken. So I say no to people, which they don't like. But it's not to put them off. It's to say, okay, let's do this the right way. And what I do say is I don't mind people learning through play, but they got to use disposable material first, and they have to learn how to use the tools in a fail-safe way, meaning they understand that everything does break and everything does fail, but they got to be willing to go through that process. And so what I would say to somebody walking into the shop, Don't tell the shop teacher what to do. Ask them what they recommend, and then be willing to go through the process of learning how to do something the right way. So, you know, mostly shop teachers are going to listen to this, so they're on the other, they're on our side of it. I don't know what to say exactly to people to get them to slow down at the door, but what I do say is, I ask them, "Are you okay breaking that material?" You know, and they might say, "Sure," because they don't even know the. That's the problem, is they might not even know the value of the material they're holding in their hand. So anyway, I don't know how to, you know, how to marry the two and make it easier, but I do want to, because I think it's great that people want to, you know, learn through play and that they want to be a part of the industrial arts world. But that there has to be some sort of, you know, entry.
Yeah. So I'll add a couple of things on that. Like as far as the entry into the shop, you know, we've done something this year that I've really enjoyed. I hope I can make it last, but I don't know if I will be able to, where we've made our study hall hour, an open shop hour. So I run the shop, and it's a much more, I guess, makerspace feel than my shop class, where I have like objectives and you guys have to, you know, perform a certain level of craftsmanship or a certain level of quality for me to like accept your work. And we go through checkpoints, and we, you know, we have one, you know, project we're working towards the completion of, and sometimes we have makerspace movements within that, but really, essentially, it's not a learn through play course. It's a, I'm going to give you these objectives and you're going to learn these objectives. And so at the end of the day, though, during the study hall hour, students can opt to come into the open shop. And during that time, I quit doing quality control. I quit micromanaging, which I don't micromanage a lot, but I pretty much turn that switch completely down. And then I limit them, of course, to like scrap wood and certain, you know, nuts and bolts and screws that just aren't sorted or whatever. And then I just say, do whatever, you know, and it's been sweet because it's kind of fun to watch. And it's also nice to know that, like, if you get a curiosity that happens in your class time that doesn't align with the course objectives or what you're trying to, project you're trying to run, you can say, hey, come back during the study hall hour, you know, and then they come in during that time and then they can try their crazy idea. And so that's been a nice outlet, like having a dedicated time for that. Like, you want to make your cutting board a second time, that's fine, but we're moving on. Like we've moved on past the cutting board, but you can come back eighth hour and you can make your new cutting board idea with your new crazy handle during that time.
That sounds pretty good.
That's been handy having that
time. So they have to pass, am I right? They have to pass some sort of prerequisite to use the space as a free space?
The nice thing about that time is it's low enough traffic that I can use it and work with students who do not have my class even. You know, so I have students that I don't teach that never use the bandsaw in my class. They come down during that hour and it's low enough traffic. I just stand next to them while they're at the bandsaw, you know, and we just use it together.
Yeah.
So,
gotcha. So it's kind of like a personalized makerspace. So like walk in, they can do whatever they want, but they just got to do it with you type of thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Unless they've been in my course, then they know like, okay, Mr. Barch, like I'm going to run the bandsaw. And I say, yeah, go for it. And I work with I continue working with the kids who haven't been through my course.
Right.
So,
so I have something similar. We have an after-school program called STEAM, and it's fantastic because there's a lot of people, and my supervisor has been an advocate and he supports the program and he directs traffic towards it. But what happened when we first started was people just wanted to use equipment and they would use very valuable materials and they would have no clue even how to use a drill, nor even know about just the general fail-safe of a machine. So I tried to resist, doesn't work. They just look at it as like I'm the grumpy man, you know, and I'm sure other shop teachers can relate. This is like, for some reason we get pigeonholed into this grumpy man thing. You know, even though I have like over a decade of experience, they disregarded that completely because they thought I was in their way. You know, and then that was about a year and a half ago. And finally I had to explain to them, listen, I'm not against you guys. I'm on your side, but they still didn't hear it. So it was only when I finally said, okay, look, you want to use this tool? I'll train you. So I had to train each person. You know, that takes a lot of time. So what I realized is what I could do is I made these videos on how to use each machine. And then I would say to them, okay, well, you're not allowed to use the machine unless you demonstrate after watching the video, you demonstrate that you know how to use it. And then I would, I have like a roster and I can check them off. And so there's actually like a score sheet. So like they could say, oh, this person's certified for like 4 machines and this person has 6 machines. And so they kind of like know about this now. Also the teachers in the other side of the, you know, room, they kind of generally know that I'm on their side, but there is like, you can't just jump in and use a tool. You got to use it the right way. And also temporary materials are definitely the first route because you don't even know what you want to make. And that I always found funny is that people, when they go to a make, like what they think is a makerspace, they grab the most expensive material they can, and then they go and practice on it. And I'm like, why are you doing that? You know? And that's because they have no experience, which is perfectly fine. So, like, I always ask them, hey, can you make it in cardboard first? Can you make it in scrap wood first? And then that kind of helps out a lot.
Yeah, you got to hold your ground there with the whole card. You know, we had to do that with our normal students even, you know. And and that's just us knowing the students. But, yeah, I always tell them well done is better than well said when it comes to, like, them talking up a big game and – I know how to do this. And it's like, well, then doing it on cardboard should be no problem. But yeah, you got it.
That's good.
Yeah, you got to put those parameters up. Absolutely. So nice. I want to touch on something you kind of alluded to, though, because I think this is an important kind of flip side of the coin to consider is that it's good that people are aware, you know, the whole makerspace and STEM, while frustrating because we kind of want to say, hey, we've been here. We've been doing this. Hello. You know, but at the same time, it is good because it's kind of a way for people to get past the stigma, I think.
Yes.
I think it's a way for people to get past the stigma. Can we just give people credit for what we're doing already? I think so. Like, I'm okay with that. Whatever. You want to take the credit for STEM or Makerspace? Sure. But I guess, well, I'll just highlight kind of like a story I kind of observed through social media and whatnot. Someone made the comment about like Project Lead the Way teachers trying to be shop teachers. And I don't know, are you familiar with Project Lead the Way?
No, not really.
Okay, so it's like basically students have the option to get a science credit, but they're taught science through engineering. And because they're taught through engineering, you know, like if you have a Project Lead the Way lab, like you have to have a drill press and you have to have all these objective, like you have to have a makerspace or a shop or whatever you want to call it now. And so basically, they're doing more shop style projects in the science and math world. I think there's a Project Lead the Way for math and science. But my response to that was, okay, what better way to, can we break down the walls of all of our content areas, which we compartmentalize and we shouldn't. And what better way to kind of get past the stigma is letting the science and math teachers do a little bit of what we do. And eventually they're going to gain more respect. You know, if we let them onto our playground, yeah, they might go into it with a cocky attitude. But, you know, after a while, they're going to give us a little more respect. I don't know. Can you know what I'm saying, Ron?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the phone broke up a little bit, but I think I got the gist. Basically, you have new programs coming up all the time. And they can call it STEAM, they can call it Makerspace, they can call it STEM. That's great. I think it's awesome what they're doing. I think it's like super important because the stigma you're talking about is that the shop teacher is not innovative. The shop teacher is not creative. The shop teacher is gonna train you how to work in a factory. And all of that's true, but it's not true like only that. They will train you to work as a welder and then you could become a welder. They will train you to repair equipment and then you could work as a repair person or on a factory line. But that's not the end of it. That's just the baseline. Then there's creative projects on top of that where, you know, I mean, I personally have always done creative stuff. We built go-karts from scratch. We've done competitive projects where we built a hovercraft, two teams against each other. We've done all kinds of stuff where we're super competitive and we're also innovative. We do, instead of doing a regular gas car, we're doing an electric car. So, but you need the baseline. The baseline is how does the equipment work in a safe way? And so when they bring in the idea of a makerspace, this is great because it's a much better branding than industrial arts, because industrial arts comes with this idea that you're going to work in a factory. And yes, a lot of the training that was done in industrial arts was directly for contractors, electrical contractors, plumbers. It was a one-track thing. It was called the trades. But if you learn the trades, you can use them to your advantage. For instance, Henry Ford was a machinist way before he became an innovative icon that we know him for. You know, and Thomas Edison worked for his father in a wood shop as an apprentice. So, you know, and obviously these are extreme cases, but the majority of people that know how to do that stuff usually have their own projects going on. And so the stigma is that it ends at the factory, where I just think that's the baseline. And so, yeah, Makerspace, STEAM, STEM, it's a much better branding. So I'll take it is what I'm saying. I'll take it, but I'll take it with, please, I think all these people need to get on the same page and realize that underneath it all is industrial arts, and the you know, the three things are there. The people can get hurt, the machines can get damaged, and the materials are going to get wasted. So you gotta work with the shop teacher on this one. You know, that's my recommendation to people. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, totally. And then I'll try and be a little more articulate in the. I guess I'm okay with the concept of breaking down walls. That you're not a science teacher, you're not a math teacher, I'm not a shop teacher, that in a way we all do each other's jobs. And if a project lead the way teacher is kind of, God forbid, stepping on my toes, teaching a kid how to use a drill press, I'm actually okay with that. You know, assuming he's doing it in a acceptable, safe way, I think it's good. I think it's kind of like, you know, a bakery opening up across town, the competition may be good for you. I guess is what I'm saying. If somebody,
yeah,
because I know people are looking at this as like annoying and competitive and like stealing our ideas and things like that. And you know, when you get lost in the semantics of it forever and the rebranding, you could say is annoying. And like even the term industrial arts technically is out of date, right? Like it's supposed to be industrial technology and now it's career and technical education. And, you know, that's just people spinning the wheel. And I'm not going to waste my energy getting upset about it, but if I can bring more people into my playground and make my playground bigger at the end of the day and more, you know, that make the moms and dads who think their kids are only on the science and math route more open to the idea of their kid using drill press, you know what I mean? Sweet. I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like, you know, so, you know, I'm sure we've talked about this before, that there's the college track and the trades track. But what's nice about STEAM or STEM is that science, technology, engineering, math. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to marry the trades with the college track, and it's really working out. Like there's a lot of students that are academically focused, but also want to learn how to make a circuit or a flashlight or a robot or a car or something like that. So you know, we never had that before.
Been science and math, right? Like,
absolutely, it's nothing new,
right? So again, it's kind of breaking down that compartmentalized thinking, which I think at the end of the day is best for our students, anyways. Because I'm tired of my students thinking like, why do we got to do math in shop class? And it's like, why do we got to do life in shop class? Like, that's really what we're doing here. We're just doing life.
Yeah.
So it's not.
It's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Math is not this like this lonely island skill set. It's some of it is life.
And it's funny because it really depends on where you grow up and stuff. So like me growing up, I knew I loved cars and I liked Legos and I liked solving problems and making stuff, but I never wanted to take auto mechanics until I turned like 18. And then I was like, wait a minute. I don't know how to build the stuff that I want to create. So I got a job as a mechanic. So like, you know, so I was convinced, people convinced me you can only go to college. So I'm a victim of that tracking. And so luckily I pursued a college where it's called industrial design, which is pretty much like product design. But they don't teach you mechanics. You got to learn that on your own. And they don't teach you model making. They just expect you to be able to make your prototypes. So I had to learn all this stuff at nights, weekends, and mostly after. Once I graduated college, the shit hit the fan. Right. And I realized it was scary because I was jobless because I knew how to draw and I knew how to design, but that's kind of worthless if you don't know how to make stuff, how things go together. What kind of designer or engineer are you if you don't even understand how your car works? You know, so how are you going to make anything better if you just, I mean, unless it's fantasy, you know, people can draw beautiful pictures and work for Disney. It's just fantasy. It's like movies, you know, which is perfectly fine. You know, like Star Wars, like nothing has to work. It's just got to look cool, you know. But even the Star Wars designers, they're usually like motorcycle mechanics too. Like the people that design all those crazy low-flying hovercrafts and whatnot, it's all based on motorcycle engineering. And if you look at the majority of people aren't looking at a motorcycle race, so they don't realize how cool it is. It's like a subculture. So what Disney does or I guess Star Wars is not Disney, but I'm getting the companies confused. But what the movies do is they bring subcultures to life in a way that you can fantasize, like, oh, it's on the moon or it's on the planets. That was so cool. We got that here on Earth. People are driving race cars at over 200 miles an hour through a 90-degree turn. It's like, how do they do it? Because they got an upside-down wing. How does that work? Engineering, you know? So it's all connected, and I'm so glad that they repackaged it, but they – really got to throw some respect to the original industrial arts, which is how you make stuff.
Totally. Yeah. I think that's a good summarization of I guess. Yeah. It's semantics in a way.
Yeah.
It's the rebranding in a way. It's positive in a way. And, if you're gung-ho for this movement, then yes, you definitely have to throw some respect our way.
And I think a lot of the makerspace librarians, they do. You know, they know about it. You know, we've talked about Laura Fleming before. She invited me in to teach bicycle repair. We had a great time. I don't think it's like that there's like a us versus them thing. I think it's just there is a general kind of, you know, misunderstanding of what shop class is, though. I do see that. But I didn't know what it was growing up either.
Right.
So.
Totally.
Did you have shop class growing up?
No, I didn't. You know, the what I had as shop class was this. It was literally sit in front of a computer, and the computer taught you about interior design or robotics or something. And that was middle school. High school I did, but I was the same victim as you as far as like being able to find my passion, and that I was college, and so I'd want to take automotive. And our school had a great CTE department. Like, I mean, we're talking kids coming out of there with degrees in associate's degrees in fire science and police science and dental hygienists. And, you know, that's just those professions. But then there was welding and automotive and machining and building trades on top of that. And it was like kids were bussed into our district. And I feel a little shortchanged because I wish I'd have been smart enough to take advantage of it all. But I was told, you know, college track. You got to go for this tier of a degree. You know, they had the high school diploma on like a 5-tier scale. And I was told I had to go for the top scale, which meant I didn't get enough electives to take the 2-hour blocks that were available as far as the shop classes go, because they were all 2-hour blocks because they're that rigorous. And then it wasn't until senior year I finally got to be able to. And then it was like the, you know, the freaking curtains were pulled back and it just unveiled like, oh, sweet. This is what I've been, should have been doing all along. But yeah, I hear what you mean when you're like, and so I guess that's probably why both you and I one, get along so well, but then two, also have a level of respect for the fact that like, hey, yeah, like that the makerspace movement, if it's taken middle school grades or if it's taken high school grades or the STEM movement and it's taken the traditional science and math students and exposing them to what we do, awesome. That might be what sends them on a non-college track pathway that they're actually meant to go on.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a similar thing happen, as I said, but you know, there was this school, there's a county school that had everything that you just spoke about. And I remember there was a stigma. If you went to this school, it was called Bergen County Technical Schools. If you went there, you were like the lowest of the low. That was like, that was where you went if you're just not going to college. You just don't got what it takes. Now, the same exact school, you have to take a test to get in. And you have to write a letter and you have to apply and not everybody gets in. So they went from the dumping ground to the best school in the area, and you would want to be there. And same with Hudson County too. They have a Hudson County school and they have a huge facility. And so it's funny because the times have changed a lot. And then also I'll get students come up to me and say, well, I don't want to do engineering. I don't want to do workshop stuff because I'm going into the medical field. And I respond because they have that same schedule program that you just said. They have a schedule problem. They don't have the time to take my class because they're taking all these honor classes. Mm-hmm. And I would say to them in response, okay, so when was the last time you were at a hospital? And they'll say, yeah, well, I've never been to a hospital. I'm like, okay, well, or they'll say, okay, I was there to visit, whatever. So they'll say, okay. And I say, did you see, was it like in a barn or something? No, it wasn't a barn. Did they have electricity? Yeah. Did they have machines? Yeah, they have a machine that regulates your heart. They have surgical equipment. They have MRIs. They have... So let me get this straight. It's like a technology center. They call it a hospital, but really it's like a human engineering center. And then the kid just looked at me and goes, oh my God, you're right. And I go, yeah, so you're going to be a doctor, but you don't know how to use equipment, like scanning equipment and all the stuff, the same stuff we use on the cars. It's all the same. We scan stuff. We diagnose stuff. There's code writing. It's engineering. That's all. It's a human repair shop. Yeah. And so it's a similar situation. And of course you need to know biology and whatnot, da, da, da. But you know, if you got to have some sort of basis in, you know, mechanical, especially if you're going to be like a surgeon or something like that, you know. So do you ever come across kids that say they can't take your class because they have honor classes and they don't have time in the schedule?
Yeah. I had an engineering student tell me like he wants to go to school for engineering. Tell me that one.
Oh my God.
And it was like, you don't need that honors class. And it was, I was in a tough spot. I could tell I was competing with mom and dad, which is always dangerous territory.
Right.
I was competing with another teacher, which is dangerous territory in my small school a little bit. And I just said it, I was like, you don't need an honors class. And then I just gave him the you do you speech, you know, you do you. I'm not going to try and sell you on this because, you know, if you make the wrong call, I just hope you're smart enough to reflect on whether it was right or wrong. you know, whatever that decision may be. And so, yeah, he ended up not in my class because he thought he needed that honors. And this could be a topic of discussion. I'll just tell you this. I got upset last year because they redefined what makes you an honors student. And they did at the end of the year when I was too tired to pick a fight with the school board and the other teachers in the building and everything else. But basically, they maintain the traditional idea of an honors student. You've taken this many credits of academia and all this stuff. And there's a few teachers in the building that were more interested in, like, let's just honor them for their strengths. Like, if Barbercheck says they're a strong shop student, let's give them a shop honors. And if a music teacher says they're a strong music teacher, let's give them a music honors. But that movement, you know, was small and it just couldn't pick up enough steam at the end of the year. The status quo was easier to maintain. So that's pretty much what got maintained. And I'm still kicking myself in the butt for not picking that fight, especially when that kid was like, well, I can't take, you know, I got to get this class because he thinks he's got to have that honors. And it's that hierarchy of knowledge. That just upsets me that people think this type of knowledge is so much more important than that type of knowledge.
I have an example that I give to the students to try and get the thinking different. What I say is, I ask them, I say, okay, let's say there's two students, and this could be for parents. The parents should be listening to this too. If there's two students and they're both applying for the same job or the same spot at a college, they're applying for something and there's only one spot and both students have a 4.0 in honors or whatever that comes to. If I guess it would be a 5.0 or something. I don't even know how that works, but let's say they're top, they got an A in everything, let's just call it that, A plus across the board, and I'm the person that has to choose. Who do I choose? I only got one spot. So the student usually says, oh, well, you would look at the SAT scores. Okay, you both got the top score in the country. Now what? There's only one spot. And they say, oh, I don't know. And I go, exactly. And, you know, because what's going to happen is, in reality, is they're going to ask to see some sort of portfolio work and some sort of evidence that you're willing to go through a difficult problem or a challenge, and how did you overcome that? So that's why these, you know, STEAM, STEM, Makerspace, Industrial Arts, these projects that you do in there, they're so valuable because they prove that you're willing to, like, make something, try something out, recover, make improvements. They want to see thinking. And MIT, which is the, you know, one of the top engineering schools, their slogan is mind in hand. And they have openly admitted, and they say this, that they only have 15 minutes to look at your resume. And what they want is what they call a maker portfolio. And so the grades are good, obviously, but that's just the ticket to get on the train. Once you're on the train, you can't get off at your destination unless they, you know, approve you. And so everyone has an A who's applying to these places. So the maker portfolio is where it's at. And so that's where I warn people, you know, don't think, okay, you just get straight A's and that's it. That's not enough.
Right. Yeah, totally. So yeah, I think that taps into the, you know, we're getting outside of like makerspace stuff and we covered some pretty good discussion on that, but that's pretty much, I don't know if anybody has any commentary to add. Well, we'd love to include it in following episodes. The only thing I'm thinking that, other people, if you've experienced this, if you experienced makerspace actually competing with shop to the point that you felt your job was threatened, I'd be curious to hear about that. You know what I'm saying, Ron?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's so many different scenarios out there.
Right.
I'm lucky my district, you know, it's been an embracement. Everything's good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to have STEAM because it opens the door. We've hired a robotics teacher. We've expanded because of it.
Right.
So I'm happy for it. But I definitely could see Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm saying it's probably better for your enrollment as well. Like you, it's probably.
It's great. It's great for enrollment. It's great for now. I have a supervisor that advocates. But I did at the beginning have teachers and students that just expected, mostly to expect to use expensive material with machines they don't know how to use, and they disregarded my warnings. And that was the beginning. And then we had a whole bunch of friction. And then finally, now they see, yeah, I'm on your side. I teach industrial arts. We can call it STEAM if you want to. But these machines are real. You know, and the material you're using, if you don't know the value of it, ask advice. There's no shame in saying, I want to make X. How do I do that? Like, what would be the best way? And then I'll give you my advice. There's no restriction there. The restriction is when someone's probably going to get hurt because they never used the machine before, or they're going to break my tools because they don't know what they're doing. So that's where, you know, there's some sort of riff, you know, exists, but it's fading away because I had to be proactive. I made like a certification system. People now have to, you know, come in and they ask, oh, can I learn to use a lathe? Sure. Watch this video. Then we're going to work together and then you're certified, you know, and I usually cut plastic first. I never cut aluminum or steel with a beginner. You know, we just cut plastic. No big deal.
Right. And we're going to talk about that in a later episode. We're going to talk about the expectations of shop teachers and dealing with, I know you all get a flood of requests from both maintenance, students, parents, teachers, fellow teachers. We're going to unpack that. Ron and I decided earlier today that there's something there as well. So.
Oh yeah. When was the last time someone asked you to make something for the school? Probably yesterday, right?
Right. Yeah. 5 minutes ago. So, so yeah, that's something to unpack as well. But absolutely, if you guys got input or commentary on anything we discussed today or in previous episodes or to discuss in future episodes, hit us up at Shop Class Podcast on Instagram or Mr. G's Workshop on Instagram, which is Ron, or Jack of All Learning on Instagram, which is me.
Yeah, I appreciate everybody listening. It's we love doing this. So and I get a lot of feedback, you know, and I know you do too, Barbacek. Mm-hmm. And yeah, keep it going. If you guys have any requests or you want to talk to us about any topic, absolutely. Yeah, let us know what's going on.
We're working on improving the number of guests we have. If you were interested in guest hosting even, I think that'd be cool. Have some guest hosts. We could take a week off.
That'd be cool.
We did turn on advertisements, but we're not going to pull in a lot of money then that way, because our audience is so small. But we also activated listener support through Anchor. And so there was some interest from the audience, not majority, but enough in better audio. And if we can get some listener support, then we'll go down that road and just constantly
make it better for you. Okay, well, admittedly, I don't have Wi-Fi at my house. I probably should get that.
Well, yeah, and I don't know what all is entailed with the better audio, but honestly, I think it's just microphone and speaker, right?
Yeah, microphone, speaker, and then the communication cable. I guess the do you use Wi-Fi?
No, I use data.
Oh, okay, me too. That might be part of it. Because then sometimes it cuts. I hear it sometimes cut out, but I just hope that it's better at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I listen to it and it doesn't sound too bad. But I guess long story short, I guess if you're going to support it, just tell us what improvement you'd like us to make. And with, upon receiving your support, we'll just make it happen.
Yeah. Give us like a top three improvements and we'll do those so we can focus.
Yeah. So. Which we're going to do eventually anyways, with or without listener support. We're always looking to up the game. It just...
And I like that you do like an intro. You've been putting these intros in. Those are great.
Good, good. Hopefully that's been helpful for people to, you know, decide whether it's worthy of their time to listen to it all or part of it, or at least know what to expect. So...
What should we call this episode?
The definition of makerspaces, Just maker spaces?
Makerspace versus industrial arts.
Sure, I like that.
Okay. That might catch someone's attention. So,
there we go. Yep. All right. Well, you guys know how to contact us, and keep doing what you're doing.
All right. All right. Good talking to you, Barbacek. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right. Signing out.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Again, hit us up, shopclasspodcast@gmail.com. Shopclasspodcast on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, whatever you use most, although our favorite is Instagram, where you can find Ron at Mr. G's Workshop, as well as myself at Jack of All Learning, periods between the words.